The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the weird and wacky fiction podcast. With me, your host, Mr. Frank. What's going on, Zongers? We've all survived the Kevin Strange apocalypse once again. A really successful episode. And hats off to all you that that reach out to me with lots of support, not necessarily for having Kevin Strange on, but for sharing my opinion on the goings-on in Bizarro lately. It wasn't something that I wanted to do. It was something I felt I needed to do just to put my feelings out there. And I think by the reactions I got, that a lot of people are also feeling that way. So as many people who are feeling one way, there's a great deal of people who feel another way. And, you know, look, Zongers, however I feel or however other people feel, I guess there's really no good answer to it. The decisions have been made, and the chips will fall where they lie. Is that how the saying goes? I don't know, but my two cents is out there for whatever it's worth. But I really do appreciate Zongers who reached out to me, supporting me, whether you supported my position or not, that you appreciated me putting my position out there, and that nobody was crappy about my opinion, the stance that I have on the whole thing, which I believe is a fairly neutral stance, really. You know, it's a live and let live. Like I said, whatever my opinion is doesn't really matter, because decisions have been made and they're going to go forward the way they are, whether people like it or not, like myself. So we all sally forth, Zongers, and hope to find the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, I guess. Speaking of the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, I got a pot of gold in the author that I'm interviewing this week. As you Zongers know, I love to interview them new Bizarro author series writers. And this week is the first new Bizarro author series writer of 2019. I'm talking about Brian Asman, the author of I'm Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today. If that sounds familiar, it's because Brian was actually the sponsor. He presented last week's episode of Bazong with his book, I'm Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today, stepped up and did some promotion there. And as you're hearing this, it sounds like, hey, he bought advertising, got his way on this Bazong. I assure you it's not that way. This was actually like done in reverse order. I had actually interviewed Brian a long time before he got in on the advertising, and serendipitous as it was, he bought into advertising on Project Entertainment Network, not just Bazong. And it just happened to work out that he got the Kevin Strange episode. Whether love him or hate him, is going to be one of the most listened to episodes of Bazong in recent history, just by the virtue of it being Kevin Strange. So good on him and good on everything. This is not like Brian Asman buying his way onto Bazong. You all Zongers know he was going to wind up on Bazong regardless, and it did sort of all happen in reverse order anyway. But it pans out like this. If you thought just by the promotion that I'm Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today sounds like an awesome book, strap in, because we're going to dig deeper into what makes I'm Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today really freaking cool. We're going to talk a lot about Kevin Smith, obviously, and myself being from New Jersey and not really all that far from where Clerks was shot. There's going to be a lot of little tales and brush-ins with minor celebrities that are around and about the Kevin Smith universe. So, Zongers, without any further hesitation, I present to you the one, the only, the new Bizarro author series kickoff writer of 2019, the one and only Mr. Brian Asman. Oh, give us the gong. I'd like to welcome to Bazong this week. It's always a treat to have on these group of writers, and this year, this week's guest is the first of this elite group of writers from the new Bizarro Office Series 2019. The first release this year is by the one and only Mr. Brian Asman. Brian, welcome to Bazong.
Hey, Mr. Frank, thanks much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Thank you for being so excited. It's very hard to interview people who are a little downtrodden and not so upbeat. So I know right off the bat, we're going to have a good interview since you're all excited and ready to go. Bright eyed and bushy.
That's what I'm talking about.
So as I said, you're the first guy for kicking it off for 2019, the new Bizarro Office Series. Your book, Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today, already available March 1st from Eraserhead Press. Tell me about Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today.
Sure, absolutely. So, this is a book that had kind of a weird genesis. So in 2017, the other podcast, This Is Horror, not to dilute your market here talking about other podcasts.
Love them.
But they did a story a week challenge. And so I was participating in that. And so every week I was trying to write a different story. And I had this weird idea about a guy who stops into a convenience store and, you know, somehow a demon gets summoned and he has to fight the demon with just things you would find at a convenience store, like a 7-Eleven, for example. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of I'm a pantser. I don't really do any plotting. And so I have like my guy walks in the convenience store and like, you know, the demon's about to get summoned. And I'm like, OK, what happens now? And I'm like, well, wait a second. You know, I have to get Kevin Smith involved here somehow because it's a convenience store, you know, Clerks, like that's what you think of. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so everything just kind of clicked and came together and became this weird little novella that I never thought I would sell anywhere until Rose did the open call for Eraserhead last year. And I decided to just say, hey, why not? Like, this is a weird horror comedy type concept and maybe it'll fly. And it did. So I'm super excited to see it come to life.
I am super excited myself because when you said, oh, yeah, my new book, New Bizarro off the series, I'm not even supposed to be here today. Of course, the first thing that pops in my mind is, oh, I wonder if that has anything to do with Clerks. And come to find out, obviously, when you read the synopsis, yes, it has a lot to do with Clerks. It has a lot to do with Kevin Smith. And, wow, you know, I love the shit out of Kevin Smith, as a lot of people do. I've seen him in concert, and I buy all the videos and everything. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan, and fortunately, I am from New Jersey, and I live not too far from the Quick Stop, so I have made my, you know, I have gone to the Quick Stop, I have bought a Gatorade there, and I have a few Kevin Smith's, like, related stories we'll get into as we talk about this, but I am very excited for this book. Because of the Kevin Smith connection alone, I have every intention of opening the page of this and checking it out. Are you sort of hoping that you can cash in a little bit on the Kevin Smith fandom there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a happy coincidence that he just started shooting Jay and Silent Bob reboot this past week. And so I'm really hoping to get this book in front of him. I know some people who know some people who kind of know him. So there's that. And I also, he posts on Instagram all the time, like where he goes hiking in LA. And so, Carlton Mellick was saying, hey man, you should just like take a bunch of your books, nail them to like trees along the hiking path and see what happens. So I'm going to try that approach too.
That is a pretty interesting approach. What do you think you'll, is it just like, hey dude, look, here's my little, like piece of fandom for you, my little ode to you. I just kind of hoping you see it, or do you think like maybe he might help in the promotion as well?
Well, I'm mainly just hoping that he doesn't take out a restraining order against me. That would be kind of my greatest hope. But yeah, ideally, if he started tweeting about this or something like that, I think that could really really get out in front of a lot more people, because I think most people that are into Kevin Smith would find this amusing. You know, but it's also its own thing. It's not just a pastiche of Clerks references or anything like that. Uh-huh. I think it's a work that very much stands on its own while at the same time engaging with the viewless universe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
One of my questions for you is like, do you think it borders on something that's fan fiction? Like, how much of a role does Kevin Smith or the viewless universe work into the whole thing?
So really, I don't really think it borders on fan fiction, because the way that the Kevin Smith connections play in, it's almost like it's kind of superficial. So you know, it's mainly a story about a guy fighting a demon and not really wanting to, and not really being good at this. And, you know, just kind of getting stuck in the situation that he's not supposed to be in. Mm-hmm. And it's how he copes with that. And the demon happens to look like Kevin Smith, because the demon that gets summoned, plays by Ghostbusters rules. And so the guy happens to be thinking about Kevin Smith because he's in a convenience store. And then all of a sudden he has to fight this Kevin Smith demon.
Okay, I got you. So it's not necessarily actually Kevin Smith that's in the book.
So the demon is not Kevin Smith, right. And I'm not just saying that because I don't want to get sued.
but
the demon happens to be wearing happens to have a beard and be wearing jorts and a hockey jersey, and you know, take that as you will.
Gotcha. So yeah, I dig it, and I dig that that you have some cool marketing ploys, shall we say. That would be interesting that if he did find it, and I know. You know, Kevin Smith he embraces the indie spirit, obviously, and he's always telling people, you know, he's big on podcasting and he like the whole world to podcast. I might not want that because it's competition, but I understand.
Yeah, I feel yeah.
And like, yeah, he's definitely one of the reasons, a big reason why I do podcast, because I did, you know, get on that Smodcast bandwagon a while ago and you know, you always hear him out there just like, you know, grab your microphone, just talk, you know, you just say what you got to say. Anybody can do it, and encourages that. And to a big degree, he does that. You know, if you watch his Q&As, he's always telling people, you know, follow your dreams, make your movie. You'll never know unless you do it. So who knows? Like, maybe if he does see this and see the book, like, he might say, hey, man, hopefully he'll be really high and be like, hey, man. And take a picture of it and tweet it out there, Instagram and everything like that. That would be phenomenal if you were able to make that connection.
Yeah, I would love to. And, you know, everything I know about him, I think you're right. He seems like the kind of guy who would probably get a kick out of this, maybe be a little bit flattered. And like, I think he'd at least take it pretty well, you know, and hopefully enjoy it.
Yeah, one can only hope. And if he doesn't, well, hopefully other people along the trail might pick it up themselves and read it and enjoy it that way. That might even be like a secondary cool story. Like, maybe KS doesn't pick up the book, but somebody else along the trail sees the book, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. And Kevin, and I know, you know, we run in, I say hi to Kevin, I'll grab the book, and they go home and read it, and you have this weird like secondary person that found a book and does a big promotion around it. Not your intended target, but you know, almost the same thing. It could happen.
Man, that would almost actually be better, because right? That's a more exciting story. So hell yeah.
Yeah, in a crazy way it is. So have you ever been able to meet Kevin Smith?
No, I haven't. I've met a lot of Kevin Smith lookalikes at comic conventions, but I haven't met the man himself yet, but I hope to one day.
That's cool. Yeah, I seen one of his live shows. He played a comedy club near me, and he had two shows that day, you know, like the early show, the late show.
Yeah.
And knowing what I know about Kevin Smith, I'm like, we have to go to the late show, because then he has all the time in the world and he just loves to go on and on and on. And that,
yeah, totally.
He did that. He's actually, our show started late because he didn't give a fuck that there was a second show. And I think he went like an extra almost hour. And this was like on a Wednesday in the middle of a week in the winter. So it was cold waiting for Kevin Smith to be done with his first show. But yeah, and then we went in and he kept going. Oh man, he went so late, and it was almost actually boring in a way, because it was like, can we just wrap this show up? I gotta be in work in a couple hours here and everything. But, but it was a very surreal experience. This is about the closest I got to like meeting him per se. It was funny. The timing was right. Is like, as we were waiting for him to come on the stage, I ran to the bathroom, and in the comedy club, the bathroom is right next to the door to the, you know, the backstage green room area.
Yeah.
So I walk out of the bathroom, and right as I'm coming on this door, the door opens, and I am hit with a wall of pot smoke coming out of this door, and I knew immediately what that meant.
Yes.
So I turn and I look, and there he is, and he's you can tell he's high as a kite. It's like a movie moment. Like, it's like Weird Science when the girl comes out of the room and there's all this fog and smoke around her, and he's backlit and halo-ized, and there he is, Kevin Smith. And I look at him, and I was just like, he looks at me, he just smiled, like, just totally normal dude. I was like, hey, what's up, KS? And he's like, hey, what's up? And then I, returned to my seat, and he proceeded to go on and do his show. That was about the closest I've gotten to the man.
Hey, that's pretty cool, though. I've had a couple moments like that with various celebrities where you just kind of like see them like going about their business.
Yeah.
Like I was at StokerCon like 2 years ago, and I saw George R.R. Martin walking for the elevator, and like, there he goes, part of me wanted to be like, go up to him and talk to him and stuff like that. And the other part was like, no, like whatever you do, you're going to be fucking weird. You're going to alienate this guy. So don't do that.
Yeah. I'm like, for me, I'm not generally a starstruck person or anything, going to conventions and stuff. And you're just like, hey, whatever and everything. And I feel like same with you. Like I would feel bad about approaching people. Like I saw one time I was in New York City at a steakhouse, and as we were leaving in the bar area was Emeril Lagasse. And at the time, like Emeril Lagasse was with the food, the Food Network, like he was big shit then. And I was like, oh man, that's freaking awesome. But I never would have approached him. But I had people who have less scruples about that thing with my party, and they walked right up to him and, hey, Mr. Lagasse, can I get a picture and all that? And he was so nice. He was absolutely, took pictures and pretty genuine. It was like around Christmas time. Like you could tell he was out with his family, like out for Christmas dinner or some sort of celebration. And I never would have stepped up, but there were a couple of people in my party who were taking pictures of him, and I'm just kind of watching everything. He looks over to me, and he just smiled, and he gave me a wink and everything, and I, like that was the world to me. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was like really cool. And then I can't make this about me, but I have other little run-ins with like Kevin Smith, Viewist Universe people. But we'll get into more of that because I got to bring it back to you. You're the guest.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'd love to hear those stories though.
Yeah, I'll get to it. I'll get to them. I promise. But you're the guest, so like it's got to be about you. Right? So
hey, this is a collaborative effort between the two of us. So neither of us is more important than the other in this equation, man.
All right, good deal. I won't be starstruck by you, Brian Asman.
Yeah.
No, but I do want to know it. It was weird. The book out March 1st. So as you're hearing this, it's already out and get it. Definitely get it, but it was weird. Yeah. I didn't know about the book coming out, the new Bizarre or the series 2019. I really hadn't seen much talk about like what books were coming out for it and everything. It just seemed the promotion maybe was a little bit weaker, or I'm just looking in the wrong places, or they're promoting not in the usual places. How do you feel about the word getting out there with the new Bizarre or the series this year?
So I think, it's been a little in stealth mode, but I think now we're really trying to, get some buzz going for this book. And, there's some really cool books coming out of the series after this one. The next book is coming out, I believe, in July. It's called The Flesh Molder's Love Song by a guy named Roland Blackburn, mm-hmm. who I got to meet at BizarroCon about a month ago. He's super cool. And the book itself, I got to read an excerpt from it, and it's actually in my TBR pile. But it's pretty cool. It's about a guy who like suddenly realizes he has the ability to like mold people's bodies into different shapes. It's like weird and kind of Clive Barker-esque and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about that one. And then there are a couple other cool books coming out too that they'll be announcing more. But I think I don't really want to get into controversy right now, but I think largely because of the fallout from BizarroCon, that's been kind of the focus of Rose and everyone at Eraserhead. And I think, that's just kind of what's dominated the conversation, the community, rather than the books right now.
Yeah.
But we're trying to kind of shift that a little bit.
Right. Well, no, that's good that you're here and you're promoting, grabbing a bull by the horns. I did sort of figure in the aftermath of everything that went on, BizarroCon and everything that's going on, continues to go on, that I guess some of the focus on these first books of the year, they're a little kind of, I don't want to say backseat, but there's bigger fish to fry at the moment.
Right. Understandably so. There's a lot of really important discussion going on right now. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, but it's good. I mean, and you're the author, so it's still, you know, it's still on you no matter what, whether you're doing this, you know, through a Razorhead or not, you know, it's still on you to do the promotion and get the word out there. So this is an important step to do that. And that you know, if I know over the years, obviously I've interviewed quite a bunch of New Bizarre Author Series participants. And I know no doubt that it's almost like a sort of a fraternity vibe. Like everybody, it's a brother slash sisterhood, and everybody in the Bizarro series kind of works to promote the other stuff and get the word out there when those books come out. Is that the vibe you get?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like it's very much like you said, kind of like a fraternity or like a club. You know, we actually have secret Dakota rings. I'm not even supposed to tell you that.
Ooh.
But yeah, if we put them all together, it like, you know, forms like a gigantic 50-foot clown that comes to life and does our bidding. But yeah, it's really cool. And like just everyone within the Bizarro community seems to kind of like get excited about the new Bizarro author series. And that's pretty cool too. You know, it's not just another book coming out. It's like, you know, it's got this branding, this cachet, which is really rad. And I'm so excited to be a part of it.
So what I love to ask the new Bizarro author series is sort of the path it took to get your book there. Are you one of those guys who hopped into the Garrett Cook, workshop thing and got his book noticed there? Or did you have a sort of different path for your book?
No, I had a completely different path. So this was just, I just sent this one into the Eraserhead submissions call last year. Just kind of, unsolicited, just sent it in, mm-hmm. during that open submissions window, and Rose connected with it and stuff. And, you know, it's funny is, I actually never really thought of myself as a Bizarro author.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you know, I like Bizarro fiction, but I was more of a horror author and, you know, maybe horror comedy, some of my stuff is more serious. But this is just kind of where it landed, but that's kind of been a theme of my life is I kind of like end up like, you know, I'm just kind of like walking blindly through doors and ending up in weird places that end up being kind of awesome. So,
so I know you said that earlier that you had submitted during the, you know, the open call time frame for Eraserhead. So it's interesting that your book takes that, you know, that route in, because I think this is the first time I've heard a book shown in the new Bizarro author series that way. I know a lot of times it's people working with Garrett in his workshops, and other times it's people that that have just been sort of dealing and working with Garrett in generalities and sort of ask them for something, or if he notices somebody's work out there and maybe invites them to try out for the new Bizarro author series. But you come in during the open submissions session, which is the first time I hear that. So is it a situation where Rose approaches you, says, I like this. I don't necessarily want to make it a regular Razorhead book. I think this fits in for new Bizarro. Was that the original discussion, or did that sort of evolve out of it?
Yeah. So when she offered to pick it up, it was to pick it up as a part of the new Bizarro author series. Mm. So I think probably just because this is my first long form work that's been published. I published a few short stories before, but like this novella is the longest thing I've published at this point. So yeah. I'm still a very new name. And so I think probably putting me into the new Bizarro author series was a way to kind of just kind of introduce me to people a little bit more than just as part of just an Eraserhead release.
No, that's very cool, because then it lets those new writers out there like know, you know, they've got a shot too, and maybe you're not getting like under the main Eraserhead thing necessarily. You might, but you still have that shot. This is a way into possibly new Bizarro author series. Like I said, it sounds like a new, like you might be the first one that wound up in there. Like I don't remember any from last year's open submission winding up in the new Bizarro author series that way. So that's pretty cool. Now, did you still?
Yeah, it was super cool. Like I was just very excited. Like I reread the email like four or five times. just be like, wait, accepted? Like, is that what that says? Like,
now, did you then get sort of passed off to Garrett to kind of, you know, go over the details and the editing with him?
No. So Rose actually edited the book.
Mm, interesting.
So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she was working on that on the new Bizarro author series this year.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, I think Garrett, the last time I spoke to him, had said like he might be taking a smaller role in it. So it was all rows this year. Interesting.
Yeah, all rows. I know Garrett is still doing his workshops, though. He just posted something the other day about having a couple slots open.
Yeah,
if anyone's interested, that's probably a pretty awesome thing to do.
Yeah, no doubt. And no doubt that you know, the new Bizarre Author Series is sort of its own little project. So for Rose to, you know, take on that's like taking on another job almost too. So it's very interesting. And that could be because maybe Garrett doesn't have his hands on as much as he had in the past. You know, her hands are full right now. So that does make a lot more sense about how come the promotion got a little bit quiet.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't have any inside information, really. I was, you know, I'm one of those guys. I'm just like, I'm just happy to be here. This is awesome.
Right. Yeah. No, but yeah. Hey, you have a book and that's cool. Did you have any, you know, now this is the second year now that we have the cover look, the feel, you know, it used to have that old green kind of, it was at least a uniform cover for the series look. And last year they started just making every cover, like, you know, it didn't have that unifying look to it, whether, you know, the aesthetics of it were pleasant or not is another discussion. But do you enjoy having that type of format over the old style?
Okay, so let me just say I am completely in love with this cover right now. This came out better than I could have imagined. So the artist, Jim, and Jim, I apologize for butchering your last name, but Jim Agpalza is friggin' amazing.
Yeah.
So everyone should definitely follow him on Instagram because he does some really cool stuff. When I first saw this design, I was just like out of my mind excited about this. Mm-hmm. So I actually I printed up a bunch of back patches, and so I'm going to like put this on the back of my cut. How exciting I am about it.
That's really cool. I would not have expected that to be Jim Agpalza because, well, first of all, there's no penises on it, and I know he loves to do penises.
you just have to look closer. They're hidden. It's like a Where's Waldo thing with penises.
Oh, yeah? Well, maybe I will have to take a closer look at it. But, I mean, even, you know, Kevin Smith's image features prominently on the cover, and it's really a really, I don't want it, photorealistic type of look for him. It seems even more detailed than already Jim is typically doing. I know he likes to draw Donald Trump a lot. And Donald Trump is a little more cartoony looking, I would say, than the Kevin Smith on your the cover of your book.
Right. Yeah. It's like penises with Donald Trump hair and stuff like that. It's definitely a little more photorealistic than a lot of the stuff some of the stuff I've seen him post on Instagram and stuff. But I think it's just friggin' amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the cover definitely looks great, and it tells you. Without a doubt, if you see like my reaction, I'm not even supposed to be here. I wonder if that's a Kevin Smith book. You see by the cover right away. Oh yeah, it's a Kevin Smith book, or Kevin Smith.
Yeah, it's funny. Know. Like when Rose was posting about this on Facebook the other day, and she's like, "The cover is the synopsis."
Yeah, it doesn't
even, like yeah, it doesn't it really tells you that. Everything you need to know.
it is a great, great cover, and I think that is going to grab a lot of people into it for sure. I wonder how much you get, I don't know, just because of my age and everything. Like, it seems like everybody likes Kevin Smith. I don't know many people who like dislike Kevin Smith. So I wonder, like, if you would get people who are maybe not into his work, you know, because that cover features so prominently to people who know who he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably going to, like, I think probably there are more people who are at least into it or familiar or who will find it amusing than people who are actively turned off by the Kevin Smith connection. maybe people that just walked out of Yoga Hosers might be like, no, fuck that book, I'm not going to buy it. But, you know, I think for the most part, people would be like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, it's at least got the nostalgia connection, like you said, like people of a certain age, like I'm guessing we're probably around the same age ish.
Yeah.
So anyone who kind of came of age in the 90s is going to have like a real nostalgic connection with that.
Connection to it. And, you know, reading the synopsis about the demons and everything, it did make me wonder that you brought up Yoga Hosers. Like, was there some inspiration from that? Because obviously Yoga Hosers deals with demons in a convenience store at some point in that movie.
Yeah, you know, no, that's actually just that's just coincidental.
Right.
It's really, the connections are really more inspired by his early stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Clerks, the Mallrats, all the classics, Dogma.
So now, like you said, you've written before. Obviously, this is your first, like you said, fuller length book. But you have the short stories out there. You have some really, you're in some cool stuff like in the Lost Films. That's a perpetual motion machine publishing, that put that out. That's a pretty prominent, publication. So, you know, you see yourself in that and you're like, hey, I'm doing pretty good here. But those you're tending to be, more of a straight horror stuff in that, in short story format.
Yeah, I think so. Like, a lot of the stories I write are a little more straight horror, I guess you could call it. It's funny that you bring up Lost Films, because that was just that, you know, not anything else I've done, but like that anthology, when I found out I was going to be a part of that and seeing that TOC with people like Gemma Files and Brian Evenson, I just like lost my mind pretty much.
Yeah, rightfully
it's funny. So. I actually got my acceptance letter for Lost Films on New Year's Eve. And so I was like actually at a bar with some friends and it came through on my email. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
That's pretty awesome. And you have every right to be blown away by being in that. I mean, because it's the predecessor anthology to it, Lost Signals, was really like a monster of a hit anthology. You know, it's a monster of a hit. It can be for the indie or presses, but it came up for Stoker Awards, if I'm not mistaken. The follow up of Lost Films, it's a pretty big deal. And like you said, the table of contents in it is sort of a blown away thing. Now, how long have you been submitting like the short stories prior to having your new Bizarre Author series release?
So basically at the start of 2016, I kind of decided to buckle down and really try and make it as a writer. Mm-hmm. Pretty much all my life I've written here and there, but I wasn't writing regularly until 2016 or so. And I'm not too big on New Year's resolutions, but I kind of had, it was more of like a, you know, semi-midlife crisis moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where I realized I was going to be turning 35 and I just hadn't really, I wasn't at the point where I wanted to be creatively in my life. I'd always said, oh yeah, I totally want to be a writer someday. And I'm like, well, fuck dude, someday is here.
Yeah.
I got to do this. And so I really buckled down that year, I made a goal to write every day, mm-hmm. Which I came close to hitting. But that was the year I started submitting stuff, probably after the first 3 or 4 months of writing, regularly, I started submitting stuff. And that fall I got 2 stories accepted. One was for an anthology about life under a potential Donald Trump presidency, which was still a potential at that point in time.
Uh-huh.
And the other was for a magazine called Double Feature that was publishing horror and science fiction,
okay.
Like an equal distribution of both in each issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got those 2 stories published in those markets in 2016. And then I just kind of went from there and just, you know, every year I kept writing and just kind of sending stuff off as I could and keeping stuff in circulation.
Right. So about 2 years worth of short story stuff. And then was this your first foray into writing something, you know, longer form?
No. So I've before I wrote this novella, I had written 2 novels and like 3 or 4 other novellas. And, you know, since I'm probably up to writing about 10 novels. Uh-huh. So I've got other stuff that I'm trying to get out there right now, actually.
OK, so you're still going the route, though. You want to work with the publishers. That seems your focus, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that I want to do. I look at someone like Joe Lansdale, not to like compare myself to Joe Lansdale, but, you know, someone who's able to write in different genres and, you know, people who are able to like to do small press and mass market type stuff. And that's kind of what I want to do mm-hmm. eventually is get to the point where I can, you know, have the money, make the big money making novels. And then also kind of play with my weirder ideas in the small press scene.
Yeah, and that's a good, I mean, you look at a guy like Joe Lansdale and you're like, how does this guy with these crazy stories, you know, make it work? Because it doesn't seem like, you know, the goofier stuff especially is harder to, I think, legitimize maybe is a good word to to use in this situation. You know, something like the drive-in, it's an incredible story. But I mean, and the drive-in is one of those books I consider like bizarro before there was bizarro.
Right.
And it's like, man, how the hell did he get this published when, you know, a lot of people in the bizarro genre are like, my stuff is so weird and I don't, nobody wants it and I can't get it published until I found bizarro. And yet, but yet, you know, Joe Lansdale's out there and that's batshit nutty as a lot of bizarro and he made it work. So yeah, he's totally somebody, to live up to for that, to get to that level.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just kind of like, you know, I want to live the dream of being able to write whatever I want to write and somehow make money at it. So
that's a dream for a lot of people for sure. But hey, you know, I don't begrudge anybody that dream. I would love to attain that goal too one day myself.
Yeah, exactly. So
from here, you say you already got stuff. Are you already shopping other stuff around?
I am. Yeah. So I can't really talk about anything right now, but I've got a kind of a verbal commitment on a novel. Mm-hmm. And then I have some other stuff I'm getting ready to shop around. I'm actually finishing off a crime novel right now, that's a little more oriented towards the mass market. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with everything. So I'm doing that. And I still have a couple short stories in circulation too. Like those are just fun to play with.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're good.
That's a great forum for getting, you know, for really playing around with ideas. So,
yeah. And it's good to hear like you're like, you know, I got a crime thing going on. That'll be more mainstream. I got this weird thing and that, you know, into the bizarre, the weird stuff. You got the straight horror. You're writing. I guess you're just writing however comes to mind, especially since you're right by the seat of your pants.
Yeah, absolutely. Just whatever idea I get excited about. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm working on. You know, I do have a rule where I try and finish everything I pick up, because that was a problem for me throughout so much of my life. Is I'd get excited about an idea and I'd write like, you know, a couple, like 5 pages, 10 pages, like 100 pages, and then stop. You know, I'd hit a wall.
Yeah.
And now I just kind of power through no matter what. And there's a lot of things I've written. You know, I've written entire novellas that will never see the light of day because there's a flaw in the idea. But at the same time, there are things I really just wanted to figure out and play with. And then I get to the end. I'm like, okay, cool. I got that out of my system. On to the next thing.
Yeah, that's the great feeling is learning to finish a thing. And I am similar. I have a lot of started and stopped story ideas sitting in a folder. And, you know, I feel like they're great ideas. And maybe one day it'll get revisited again. But it just... you know, it hits those dead ends and you're like, well, there's this other shiny idea I'd like to pursue and let's see if that takes off. I always say, let's start writing and see what has legs until something catches and keeps just going.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's so many different approaches. There's as many different approaches as there are writers. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it's just a matter of finding out like what works for you. For me, I found like if I'm working on an idea that I'm not as jazzed about and I have another idea that I'm really more jazzed about, if I force myself to finish the thing I'm not excited about, I end up even more excited to sit down and write the thing that I am like that's on the horizon, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when that hits, I'm just like, I'm like a kid in a candy store, man. Where I'm just like, yes.
Oh yeah. Those are really great moments when you're just feeling everything. Like the book is just writing itself and you're just like, just in glorious happiness. Like I'm not even thinking, the book's just writing itself right now.
Yeah, that's what I love. That's when I'm really in the zone. Like I feel like I'm kind of lucky in that like what I really love is just simply the act of sitting down and writing. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some people who more like having written, they don't like the act of writing as much, or they find it anxiety inducing or something like that. And I'm just one of those people that like, no, literally just sit, like if I'm sitting there with my computer just doing my thing, my dog at my feet, like that's my happy place, you know?
Right. No, it's a good place to be. Are you still able to maintain that writing every day routine, you know, now 2-3 years later?
Yeah, I have. It's served me pretty well. So, probably about 6 months ago, I hit the 1 million word mark since I started.
Nice.
I'm also really big into numbers and, again, that doesn't work for everyone, but for me, like I keep a spreadsheet with like everything I've written and the word count, because that just gives me like an actual, like, you know, like it's like a progress bar or something, you know, where I can just see like, okay, I've done this much, this much, this much, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I always joke like, oh yeah, I wrote 1 million words and like 6 of those were good. but you know, hey, you know, it is, it's just about finding out what works for you. And for me, like, just tracking things helps. It's a way to hold myself accountable. And, you know, now I'm starting to work on like different kinds of works. So I've started writing screenplays as well.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a mix for me now, where I'm still trying to write every day, but I'm working on different things. So it's not as straightforward as it used to be.
Yeah, gotcha. And you're able to jump around between those different projects all in the span of a writing session?
Well, I've had to. So I'm actually in an MFA program right now at UCR Palm Desert, which is a pretty cool program. They have some really awesome professors in there, like Stephen Graham Jones teaches
in
that program. And Todd Goldberg of Gangsterland and Gangster Nation fame. So, and then they have all kinds of really cool guests at the residencies. So because I'm in an MFA program right now, I kind of have had to teach myself to jump between projects when, you know, before I would just work on one project until it was. So it's a little hard for me to shift gears, but I'm making myself do it.
Yeah. You sort of have to out of necessity at the moment.
Yeah. It's like a survival tactic at this point, but you know, it is kind of it's a little frustrating sometimes when I'm really excited about one thing I'm working on. That's like, okay, hold on. I have to put this to the side and go work on a screenplay right now, but it's good. It's teaching me some good work ethic.
I'm so glad you just answered one of the questions I had for you, which is, you know, your new book, I'm Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today, has a blurb from Stephen Graham Jones, which I had to ask you, how did you get a blurb from Stephen Graham Jones? And I think maybe you just answered that.
Yeah. So, I met Stephen a couple years ago. He does an advanced horror fiction writing workshop at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, where Stephen King started writing The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a writing in residency type deal. So I did that a couple years ago, which was really cool. They still do that every year. So everyone listening, if you have any interest, I could not recommend that program more. It's so awesome staying in the hotel. And like the week we were there, it was snowing. So like we were just hanging out by the fire the whole time, like, you know, writing and talking about stories and stuff. So anyway, that's how I met him. And then I found out he was teaching in this program. So I joined the program at UCR Palm Desert. And so this novella actually was, I worked on this my first quarter of my MFA program.
Okay.
So yeah, it was my, like, you know, this was like my graded project basically. And then I submitted it and yeah.
That's almost like cheating.
Yeah. So this is a school assignment basically that I'm making money off of now.
That is really awesome. And right. I mean, that is another big plus in your corner to have a blurb from Stephen Graham Jones right there.
I was so honored when he asked, like, he, like at the end of the quarter, he was like, hey, if you ever get this published and need a blurb, hit me up. And I was like, oh my God. That's so cool to work with too. By the way, like, so if anyone out there ever gets the chance to take a class with Stephen, like, that guy has such an amazing understanding of story and such like a fantastic commitment to helping you tell the story that you want to tell. It's just really cool. It's a really cool experience.
Yeah, I can imagine that's just like a once in a lifetime opportunity. Were you aware he was teaching the course when you signed up for it?
So the first time I took a course with him, like it was kind of advertised as, you know, work with Stephen at the Stanley Hotel. And so, yeah, so I knew it was going to be with him when I signed up.
Oh, that's so awesome. It's still like completely like to be able to get access to somebody like him and write with him. That's pretty incredible. Are you like, you know, you mentioned too, like just sitting around that hotel around the fire, just writing and talking shop with other people too. I love that. Some of my greatest output is getting together with my writer friends at like a Panera or library or just somewhere and just all sitting around and just writing. And I have just like this incredible amount of output in a couple of hours that I would never have just sitting there writing by myself. And I don't know what it is, if it's feeding off of energy or if it's like a guilt thing, like, oh, Jesus, he's still writing, let me keep going and just a push like that. But it is some of the best output and some of the funnest times of writing.
Dude, hell yeah. Like I totally get that. I found too, like whenever I kind of work with people like that, I get so jazzed about whatever I'm working on. Like for the past year, actually, I've been working with John Skip. and another writer named Shelley Lyons. And I live in San Diego. They're in LA, or Skip wasn't in LA until recently. So I was driving up there like every other week or so to meet with them. And that was a fantastic experience too. I don't know if Skip's started teaching classes again in Portland, but if he ever advertises classes on Facebook, I'd say go do that because it's awesome.
Oh my God. Yes. You have some really good moments there with some really awesome people. You're having like cool star moments, yeah. but you're getting like real knowledge out of some incredible people too in the process. That's awesome.
Yeah. I've been really lucky in that I keep finding myself in these situations where I can take advantage of learning from people who are such amazing writers. And I've also just met so many other people who are also up and coming writers. That are just really fantastic people. Like the person I mentioned a minute ago, Shelley Lyons. Mm-hmm. So we've been working on a novel with her that is probably going to be coming out in the next year or so. And it's amazing. So can't really talk about too much right now, but yeah, it's super exciting. So just meeting people like that, you know, and getting excited about the work that they're doing is just makes me more excited about my own work, frankly.
It's all like really, I'm impressed with you have this sort of like in a short span of time, you're really like, you're already moving past this new bizarro, like I'm a rookie type of thing. Like just talking to you, like you're already like that rookie shit is done with it. I got all this other stuff going on, so much other stuff going on. And I'm trained by Stephen Graham Jones and John Skip. And I have all these awesome writing projects with these up and coming people. It sounds like, you know, you're just at the beginning of something big that's going to come about. Like you're going to become much more prominent, it sounds like, over the next 2 years.
Oh man. Well, thank you. That obviously that makes me pretty happy to hear you say that, because as someone in the community who works with so many awesome writers, you know what you're talking about,
but yeah.
You know, all I can do is keep working my ass off and see what happens, you know?
That's all you can do, but like you're doing the do. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I will treat you then to another Kevin Smith related story.
Yes, please do. Yeah, let's hear them.
I have no other segue into it, so I'll just award you for being a diligent worker with another Kevin Smith. So,
thank you.
I have I had a relation of my wife, a relative cousin of my wife, was having a Christmas dinner party, for some he's like an investor, and he was having a dinner party for family and some of his clients. At his house and everything. So we go over there and we're having drinks, sitting around, it's all manner of people, all age of people. And we're having, decent conversation. And since it's like half family, sort of half clients, like, you know, the family kind of huddled together and the client kind of people, they huddle in their corner.
Yeah.
And, at one point, I was a bunch of beers in, I was really feeling good about things. And, one of the guys gets up and he goes to the bathroom, and somebody mentions something about, he was talking about that being in that movie and all that. Anyway, turns out the guy who had just gone up to go to the bathroom, was in Clerks, the contractor who is involved in the talk about the Death Star blowing up and the contract.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was the contractor.
No kidding.
So I'm like, I have to go to the bathroom myself now too. So I walk up the hall and he's in the bathroom and I'm waiting to come out, and he comes out of the bathroom and I'm like, now it's, I don't say I'm starstruck, but for some reason, this like just forgettable sort of character in the Clerks movie, I am enamored. Right. So he comes out and I'm like, I understand I'm in the presence of a movie star. And he laughs and he shakes my hand and everything. And we proceeded for the rest of the night to be the best of buddies. And I had to talk to him, you know, I had to ask, I had to get all the dirt on it. And of course I'm drunk as hell, so I'm just really making an ass of myself. But I was like, you know, and it turns out like he was just a contractor and showing up there every day. And Kevin just kind of invited him. He's like, hey, I need a thing like this. You got the right look and everything like that. And that was it. You know, he just kind of fit the bill and he just happened to be a regular patron of the Quick Stop and he got the gig. And he, you know, he thought at the time, of course, he's like, hey, whatever, you know, he didn't, you know, nobody could predicted this dumb little thing that some dude was doing would actually become like the giant thing that it was. So he never thought, I don't think he was even aware, you know, like the thing had become a film and stuff until, you know, it got the big Miramax release and stuff, and something somebody had like mentioned to him that, hey, you were in a movie. He was like, what? You know?
Well, that's really funny.
And then he had showed up when they were doing, I guess it was Jay and Silent Bob, where they did that scene right in the beginning where there was the baby Jay and the baby Kevin Smith.
Oh yeah, yeah, I love that scene.
He's in that scene because he had heard Kevin Smith was in town to film outside of the Quick Stop, so he stopped by and everything to say hi to Kevin and all that. And he's like, he's in the scene as just like an extra walking by during that little baby scene.
Oh, that's a cool bit of trivia. I never knew that.
Yeah, yeah. And if you watch, you can tell it's him. But you know, he's no speaking role. He just kind of walks by at one point. So that was pretty neat.
Oh man, yeah, that's really cool.
So that was a sort of a Kevin Smith brush up, and I have one other. I was working in this local supermarket. It's called ShopRite. It's a supermarket like any other. I was cashier there, and so I'm cashiering away, and I had recently discovered Clerks at this point. You know, it was out in the video store. I didn't discover it until it was in the video stores and all that stuff. And
yeah, me neither. It was probably like 99 or something when I first saw it. Like, I had actually read the comics first.
Oh, okay.
Before I even saw the movie.
Yeah, I think it was like probably 98 or 98 99 when I first did it. And it was like, I think like a lot of people have the other friends like, oh, you got to watch this, comes over with the tape, you put it in, you sit there, you go, is this whole fucking thing going to be in black and white, you know?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yes, everybody says that, because after I watched the movie, I'm like, you got to watch this, and I was making all my friends watch it. Every one of them is this thing in black and white. You're just like, shut up, just shut up and watch, and you'll forget it's in black and white, which is what happens to everybody too. So
yeah,
you know, I went through that usual routine and everything like that. And so I'm sitting there working one day in ShopRite doing my ShopRite thing, and this chick comes through my line, and I'm ringing her up, and you know, he's just like, look, I know this. Why do I know this girl? Why the hell do I know this girl?
Ooh.
I think I know this. Why do I know this girl? So you know, I'm ringing up her stuff. And it kind of dawns on me. I'm like, Jesus, I think this is Vanessa, Veronica. I think this is Veronica from Clerks.
Holy shit.
So, but I'm like, I'm not sure, you know, I'm still like, you know, fresh with the movie, enamored with the movie right away, but kind of fresh. I wouldn't, you know, and it's just like, all right. So this is back in the day when people still wrote checks out for their food, their groceries.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So she writes out a check, and I'm like, yes, I get the name. And so I get the check, and I look at it, Marion Giglia. I'm like, I committed it to Mary. And then when she walked away, I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget it.
Yeah.
So I run home. This is no cell phones. You can't IMDb nothing. I had to run home and do some research. I get it, grab the copy of Clerks. I look on the back, Marion Giglia. I'm like, holy shit, it was her.
Man.
I was like, ah, fuck. I kind of missed an opportunity, but that's awesome. Now I can say it like Marilyn Gigliotti came through my line.
Man, dude, that's really funny. And
it
dude,
gets better.
That you had to like run home and actually look on like the box. Of
oh,
the
yeah.
Video.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, my God. That's amazing.
That's old school 90s research right there.
Yeah.
So dude, anyway,
I love that. Like my girlfriend and I were talking about this the other day where like the internet has just made everything too easy for everyone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's,
you know, it's like, oh, we can just like whatever question comes up, we can just like look up the answer. You know,
I just recently took a drive somewhere. I didn't know where it was, about an hour or so away from my house. And, you know, obviously you pull out the phone, you put on the maps or the Waze or whatever you do, and you get there. And I was talking to my wife. I'm like, how the fuck do we find any place to get anywhere that we didn't know in the past? Like, oh my God, it's incredible how far we've come in such a short time.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. It's crazy. I kind of like getting lost though. I try not to use my GPS on my phone too much.
Oh, okay. I can't stand being
lost. I'm not like a Luddite or anything like that. Like I still use it if I really have to get somewhere right away, but I try and like figure out the directions. I like bullshitting directions where like, I'm like, okay, like I know where this is in relation to this. Let me see if I can fucking find it, you know? Like it's a challenge to myself.
Well, no, there is an adventure, so. There's something. I do have a there's a postscript to that Marion Giglia.
Oh, yeah. 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 What is it?
Probably about a month or so later, she comes through my line again. And now I know it's her. And I'm checking her out again. And now I know it's her. So now I have to check her out at a cashier stand in a grocery store. And I am fighting the urge to not say, after she pays, try not to suck any dick on your way out to the parking lot. So, and I managed not to say it, but you know, it was like one of them Roger Rabbit sweating it out, about to explode moments.
Just picturing you like yanking your own collar, like yeah. Rodney Dangerfield style.
Sweating like a pig. Yeah, yeah. It was all I could do. But those are my two direct Clerks run-ins.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah. So no, it's kind of cool. You know, you can always run to the Quick Stop and do the over there. There was no RST video by the time I finally did go over there. That went by the wayside. But the Quick Stop is still there to this day.
Still there to this day, man. If I ever get back to the East Coast, I definitely want to try and get through Jersey and check that out.
Yeah, it's a cool moment. You have to go in and you have to get yourself a Gatorade or complain maybe that there isn't any Gatorade and, you know, just do the thing. I'm sure they've seen it all before over there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to like leave a copy of my book there or something like that, like Hiding Behind the Doritos.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
I feel like I need to do that.
Yeah, you have to do the whole I guess, Kevin Smith tour over there, because everything is right over there in that area.
Yeah, exactly. Is his comic book store over there, too?
Yeah, yeah, it's not far from that at all. They talk about the Tri-Town area. And that's,
okay.
Yeah, that's, they're all, well, Red Bank is just a little bit outside of that, but yeah, it's all right around in that spot.
Okay, right on. Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna have to do that one of these days.
Oh yeah, it's a definite must, like a trip to Mecca.
Yes, exactly.
And then you could bring your new book, the I Am Not Even Supposed to Be Here Today, and drop it off in all those locations. And hey, well, too bad they're not doing comic book men anymore. You could try to get in there and hawk it on them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
That would have been
a great thing, great promotion.
Right?
But yeah, I like your idea of making a road trip out of it and like doing like a pilgrimage and like, you know, leaving copies of my book at every sacred Kevin Smith site.
Yeah, no, that would definitely be an awesome thing to do. Even
if I could find like the skee ball alley where like, you know, God got like, you know, beaten up by like the hockey players. Or something on the Jersey Shore.
Yeah. You know, now that you mentioned it, I'm not even sure that was filmed, that scene in New Jersey. It might have been, but I don't recall it being filmed in New Jersey. I'd have to check on that one.
I'm sure that was.
It might have been. No, they might have filmed that in New Jersey. It's possible. Chasing Amy. I mean, a lot of it was done in New York.
It definitely looked like an East Coast boardwalk. Like,
yeah. But, oh, yeah. No, yeah.
It could have been up or down the mid-Atlantic, though.
Now so. That's some trivia. I'm not going to have to take to the internet since I now can and find out where that scene
is. Yes. It's possible. Wait, you're not going to, like, you know, watch the movie and, like, pause it and then, like, look at the sky and try and figure out, like, the orientation of the sun and, like, what latitude it possibly was? Or...
Well, I'll tell you what. If you walk into any arcade on the Jersey Shore, it's going to look like that.
Yeah.
It does all look like that. That's how it is. And you have skee ball out there in California too, right? It's not a Jersey thing.
Well, we do. We have Dave and Buster's and stuff. And actually, I'm originally actually from the East Coast, by the way. So I grew up going to Ocean City, Maryland.
Okay.
And also Ocean City, New Jersey.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right there. You know what the shore is all about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been here since 2005 though. So I'm like, you know, I'm a Californian through and through, but I still have my vestigial memories of the East Coast.
Especially
boardwalk fries, man. I miss boardwalk fries. They don't have good French fries here.
Oh, that's yeah. I guess
they're fine.
Yeah, it's something you can look forward to. A lot of people I know that move out of this sort of New York, New Jersey area, even like Maryland for the crabs and whatnot. One thing they all miss is the quality of the food.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, California's got some great food, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's just distinct. It's different, you know?
Yeah, it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
It's unhealthy and fried up.
Yeah,
and
California's just avocado on fucking everything.
You know? Yeah, well, I can deal with that, too.
Yeah, avocado's delicious. I'm not complaining, but...
it completely is. So, unfortunately, Brian Asmund, we've come to the end of our time together, but it's been a delight talking with you, getting to know about your new Bizarro Earth series book. I definitely want to check it out and add to my Kevin Smith experience with your book, and I can't wait to see all the cool new stuff you've got coming down the line.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I've been really excited to be here. This has been super fun.
It has been a complete pleasure and a wonderful time talking to you. And try not to suck any dick on the way out to the parking lot.
All right. I already failed.
That's it, Zongers. Brian Asman out, and another one on wax. Really cool, fun guy. Definitely an interesting twist on not only a new Bizarro author series book, but a fun twist on books altogether. I don't think we've had this. It's I don't want to call it fan fiction because it's not, but it sort of borders there. A tribute, perhaps a Kevin Smith tribute, an homage, perhaps, but something pretty different all around, it feels like. So I hope everybody goes and checks it out. I'm not even supposed to be here today. I know I will, just because I too love Kevin Smith movies, and I definitely want to see how Brian Asman has played with Kevin Smith. I think Kevin Smith would like that idea, right? So hey, and if anybody has like some sort of connection to Kevin Smith, let them know that Brian Asman has written a Kevin Smith sort of tribute, homage, or whatnot, and maybe make Brian Asman's dreams come true. Or if you walk along where Kevin Smith walks his dog Pooey, and you have a copy of the book, just throw it at him or something. He may or may not appreciate it. He seems like a cool enough dude, or at least he'd be cordial enough not to kick you in the balls and run away. And Zongers, somebody else that's not going to kick you in the balls and run away is me, Mr. Frank, because I would love for you to go and get yourself some Bizong merchandise over at the Project Entertainment Network store, the merchandise store, where you can get yourself T-shirts, hoodies, socks, stickers, bags, mouse pads, flags, you name it, we got it. All with that Bizong logo slapped all over it, so you can whore out for your favorite weird and wacky fiction podcast wherever you go. So go over to the Project Entertainment Network webpage and click on the store banner and get whisked away to retail, online retail heaven. And I thank you for listening, as you always do, Zongers, to this fine podcast. And now I'm going to let you go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
The Unsupervised Podcast, a show about acceptance and diversity.
I guarantee you these are all white children.
You gotta shoot your shot, man.
Oh, Mick, do you want some rhinoceros?
A show about love.
It's called like a chicken McGangbang. It's like a...
Whoa, I'm the chicken McGangbang.
I'm always grumpy, so I want to dominate it.
I'm not part of the Pound Me Too movement.
With some high-class humor and some science.
You need to move your lips more.
Give me another rim job.
The popcorn gives you a boner? I don't get this.
It's science, okay?
Okay, maybe more like the Seinfeld of podcasts. Not really about anything specific, but we're going to make you laugh and entertain you for a little while. So tune in every Thursday exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
Armcast, Dead Sexy Podcasts. I'm your host, Armand Rosamilia. Fridays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network, where I interview authors, publishers, editors, artists, filmmakers, narrators, the lady from Walmart, whoever I feel like talking to. That's every Friday, Armcast, right here on Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.